Welcome to the Living the Writing Life podcast. My guest today is Charlene Wexler. A native Chicagoan, Charlene has been a teacher, wife, dental office manager, mother, and grandmother. In retirement, her lifelong passion for writing has led her to create several essays and novels. Her other books include Murder on Skid Row, Milk and Oranges, Lori, and Elephants in the Room. Her newest books, Farewell to South Shore and We Won't Go Back, are coming out this year in 2024. In today's conversation, we'll be talking about creative transitions in the writing journey. Welcome to the show, Charlene.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I think this is going to be very interesting, especially when we talk about the transitions, because I think a lot of authors do that in the course of their writing career. Since your first book, Murder on Skid Row, was released in 2010, you've published six, with the seventh, We Won't Go Back, also coming out this year. And your work runs the gamut from novels to short fiction and essays. And your novels include both murder mysteries and women's fiction. Why did you choose to travel down such a variety of literary lanes?
Actually, I started with short stories and essays, and I put them up. I sort of wrote like Irma Bombeck. I don't know if anybody remembers her, but I was told I wrote like her, kind of laughter and tears. And for several years, I just put essays up and short stories. Then I had my sister encourage me to put them into a book. And probably my first was a book of essays and short stories called Milk and Oranges. And then I lost a son to leukemia, a 12-year-old, and writing became my therapy. I tried going to a therapist, but I did better writing, and it became my therapy. And I started to write a memoir about when he got sick and about how the whole family dealt with it. And I showed it to some friends and to my sister, and they said, "This is wonderful, but it's really sad. I don't know, can you do something with it?" I'm a reader my whole life. I love fiction. And I decided to turn it into a fiction novel. And that's really when it became, you know, something more interesting. I kept adding to it. I found fiction was good. I couldn't just talk about myself. I can make a different character, and I can do things with her that I couldn't do with a real memoir. So that was really my first book, even though I didn't finish it. I finished a murder mystery, Murder on Skid Row, which actually was a true story. My husband actually is a dentist, a retired dentist. He actually knew a dentist that had an office on Skid Row in Chicago, and there was a murder. So I took my hand at writing it. It's not as good as my other books. It's not long enough, or it's not fulfilling enough. But once I tried one murder mystery, I thought I'd try another one. And I went to a murder mystery conference that got me started on that one. And I don't know if you want me to keep going or you want to go into other
questions. Yeah, that is kind of interesting that you got into it. I have to confess, even though I've written short stories and I'm bringing out my second novel now, murder mysteries, I love reading them, but I could never write them because to me that would really be a challenge for me to figure out the plot. Well, probably because I'm a pantser, but just to figure out the plot and everything. So did you find it difficult to develop a plot and who did what to who and keep it all straight?
Well, I'm a writer that starts with an idea, knows the beginning, knows the end and lets my characters tell me the middle as I'm writing. I come up with ideas. I've been accused by real murder mystery writers that there's a formula and I'm not following it. You know, so I found that murder mysteries maybe are a little bit harder than a regular novel, because you really have to do some research on your police department and how they handle things. Where in my novels, my family sagas, I can do a lot of fiction or a lot of made up things. But you have to be more careful in your murder mystery if you're going to do a court trial or if you're going to do police departments, you know, like my murder across the ocean. I have contrasts between an American FBI working with an English Scotland Yards. So I had to do some research on that so that I got it correct.
Yeah, when I read that, that was one of the things that really impressed me, because I thought, you know, it's challenging enough to make sure you're getting the American judicial system and the detective process and everything correct. And now you're throwing in the British end of it. And I'm thinking, wow, that again, like you said, that had to take some research to make sure that some of your English readers aren't going to say, oh no, you've got that completely wrong. So right. I am quite impressed by that.
And did then you, in that,
go. I was going to ask you, did you spend time in England also to get a sense of place?
Not really, but it's one of our favorite places and we visited there several times. And I know from the time I started the book until I finished it, the Scotland Yards moved to a modern place. So I had to change that and include that it was no longer in the old Scotland Yards, that was on the roadway for the train, for the wagons. You know, so I had to do some of that. And since I wrote it 10 years ago, I probably, so far, I haven't gotten anyone telling me I got it wrong, but I could, because that book has been reissued.
Well, and I think readers understand that, you know, when it is set and written, you know, so long ago, of course there's going to be changes. I mean, I see that even when I'm working on short stories, it's like, you know, you might have started that short story 5, 6, 7 years ago and set it in a particular place. Well, or something like, oh, gee, the pandemic came along and suddenly things that we did prior to the pandemic, which seemed perfectly normal, like, and I was thinking about this the other day, probably because I was in a grocery store. You know how you'd go to the grocery store before the pandemic and they would have out the samples. Okay, sample of this, sample of that. I don't think they do that. They certainly didn't do it during COVID, but I have not seen that in my regular stores anymore. It's kind of like, you know, it's a little too close to the pandemic for us to be putting out food where multiple people are putting their hands into it.
Right.
Yeah, it does make it a little challenging. And talking about short stories, because both you and I write short stories and the long form, the novels, do you find that your process is a little different when you're working on a short story of maybe 5,000 words versus a novel that might come in at 70 some thousand words? Do you have a different process or different tips and tricks that you use to keep track not only of what's happening, but also because you tend to have a few more characters in a novel, just to keep track of all the details?
I've written more essays and short stories of a couple pages, but a lot of my short stories I put away and then I turn them into novels.
Oh,
That's like
that's interesting.
my current novel that just came out, Farewell to South Shore. I wrote the first 30 pages pretty much as almost a memoir of growing up in a family building. And a year ago, I matched it with taking the protagonist out of the family building and putting her into women's rights and modern problems. But the first part I wrote probably 10 years ago and didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And I probably had it out as a short story for a while. And then I added another 60 pages or 60,000 words, whatever, and turned it into a novel. But that happens a lot of times. You know, I'll put it out as a short story, and then later it becomes one of my novels.
That I find that really interesting because I've actually never thought of doing that. It's like I have a lot of short stories that are in various stages of completion sitting on my computer, but it never occurred. It's almost like when I start working on a piece, it's either going to be a short story or it's going to be a novel. I've never thought. The only time that happened, which was purely by accident, is the novel that's coming out now, Finding Fran, which was actually the first novel I ever wrote. I had written so many short stories, it's like I just feel very comfortable in that, right? And I was starting to write what I thought was a short story, and I think I hit like 30 some thousand words, and I thought, okay, this is no longer a short story because we're nowhere near the end. That was the first time
right.
that happened, but it never occurred to me to take one of my partially completed stories and see where I could go with it. I'm very intrigued by that. Do you have a preference? Do you prefer to write short stories or do you prefer to write novels?
Probably novels and essays. I write a lot of funny essays, and they're in two of my books, Milk and Oranges and The Elephant in the Room. Now I have a publisher. I originally started writing and just putting for fun, for therapy, and putting it up on Amazon. In the last 2 years, I have a publisher and he's republishing all my books, my original ones. So the short stories and essay books aren't out yet. But I think I'm better with short essays, or when I say short stories, couple of pages. But once I get going, it turns into a novel. I don't stop at like 20,000 words, you know.
That's
like you, I have a lot of stuff put away that I'll be working on again. Lately, I haven't been writing that much. I'm trying to market since I have a publisher, and it's not one of my favorite fields. You're very good at it.
Well, I don't know about that. And I'll tell you what, don't feel bad because I see so many times, both on social media and also with the authors that I interview, none of us like the marketing part. It's not that we don't like interacting with our readers. Of course, we like that. But, you know, all the background stuff, because it's such a time suck. Especially if you're going to be doing social media, there's always that sense that something has changed. You knew what you were doing 6 months ago. Oh, don't do that anymore. Or, gee, you were on Facebook, say, and Twitter a lot. Oh, well, why aren't you on TikTok? I feel like it's a constant battle to stay on top of whatever marketing we're supposed to be doing. And, you know, we don't do it terribly successfully and it takes time away from writing. Do you prefer to do in-person events or do you prefer to do online things, you know, like this podcast or
online. I prefer, like I told you, I'm 81, have a lot of aches and pains, and I'm not so keen on traveling. You know, like somebody asked me to go to be on a show in Seattle, but I would have to come out there for 8 minutes on a show in Seattle, on a new show or something. And I said, thank you very much. I'll do a Zoom. But I'm just, you know, getting too old to be traveling around a lot.
Yeah.
So I much prefer the Zoom or radio, as I'm, you know, a phone. I've done several radio interviews.
Yeah, I think in many ways it's easier, especially if you're flying, because it's like if you've got to go somewhere by plane, and then you've got to make sure if you're bringing any of your books with you, and then God forbid something happens and the flight's delayed or whatever. If I'm going to be doing any traveling, like this summer, I'm going to go down to North Carolina. I'm doing it by car. Of course, I like control. I'm a control freak, but it's like, I will load my car up with everything I need, and I'm going down to North Carolina, and I'm actually going to meet an author friend, and we're going to do some joint events. And the best part about that is she said, I got a spare bed in my house. You don't even need a hotel. I love that, right?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the whole, it's like every time you turn on the news, you hear something new about an airplane on top of it all. What was it today? Some plane lost a tire, a wheel. And it's like,
something.
You know, I think I'll drive. Thanks.
Well,
I'll just drive.
Not that it's going to drive any longer. I said, my dad, when I tried to take his car away, he was 90, and he said, I only drive on roads I know. Well, I understand that now. You know, and also, you know, authors, we like to hide in our room and write. You know, we're not, you're as social as most, you know, other jobs or people.
Right, right. So, no. Although I often thought it would be really cool to get a couple authors together and we do a train. We do like a author visit, an author tour, do it by train where you know, you get on, get to a destination, get off, do a signing, get back on. I mean, nah, I thought that would be cool. I've never actually done a train, taken a train anywhere, but
if you're worried about an airplane being late, just try it. Right.
Okay, then maybe I don't want to do that. So, you know, I do want to ask you too, because I always want to get some tips from the people that I have on the podcast. Have you run into situations where you're working on your story and then you get stuck? It's like, I can't figure out where to go next. Has that ever happened to you? And if it has, how do you break out of that?
Well, I think that's something that happens to all of us. You know, you have an idea and maybe it's not working out, or you're going full speed ahead and then like, oh, I need another 20,000 words. Where am I going to get them? What am I going to come? Oh, I think I'll put them on vacation. Let the characters take a break and go on a vacation somewhere. I'm always sending them to London because I know it and I can speak English. But I think that happens to all of us. What I usually do is take a break, or else maybe go to another part of the story and leave the middle empty and see what I can do with the last part.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's writer's block, or that's, you know, it depends. Some people I know, they outline everything and they know where they're going. I'm not one of them. Like I said, I know my beginning and my end. And then middle surprises me a lot of times.
Yeah, no, I've had that same experience. And it's, you know, talking about outlining, I know, like I read the book by Elizabeth George, where she, you know, she describes her process and everything. I mean, God love her, you know, she writes these very detailed murder mystery type things. And you know, I mean, she just outlines down to the tiniest little detail. And I'm thinking, that's wonderful. And it's just not my thing. If I already know that much, then why bother to write it? You know, I like to be surprised, you know, like you said, I like to, you know, get the character started and then see where they go next.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about the book, We Won't Go Back. What is that story about?
Well, the book that just came out, Farewell to South Shore, the first part of that book is a young protagonist who's growing up in a family building. South Shore is an area in Chicago, but it's really a metaphor for change, growing up in an old family tradition. It's a Jewish family tradition, but it could be Italian, it could be Greek, it could be any ethnic group, where the family interacts with each other, where they're solve problems by love and the patriarch saying, because I told you so. Otherwise they solve it with love and food and the head of the family, where the head of the family dies off and the rest of the family scatters out. And my main protagonist becomes a lawyer, first one to ever go to college from the family, becomes a lawyer, becomes involved in women's rights. I kind of put her like Ruth Bader Ginsburg was my inspiration for her. And this book ends with her dying. And the next book, We Won't Go Back, has her daughter and grandkids take over. First book, Farewell to South Shore, pretty much covers the 50s to 2000. The second book gets into what's going on now with the women's movements, with abortion, with abuse, with, you know, so that's pretty much continues on. But my first one is out, Farewell to South Shore.
Mm-hmm. And then when does We Won't Go Back, when does that come out?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm working with a publisher now and he has it. And I think he wants to work with Farewell first.
Okay.
You know, kind of work that one out before we get the second one, but probably next year.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then
I don't want to tell you too much about the second one because it'll be coming out.
Right. Right. One of my questions is for authors, especially authors who have been writing for several years, not somebody who just brought out their first book and it's their first foray into it. In what way do you feel you have continued to evolve as a writer? Have you found yourself writing things maybe that are more serious, or are you writing things that maybe are more of a technical challenge for you, where you had to learn more things?
Probably I'm writing things more serious. My first writing, I had a friend, my sister, edit it. I've realized since then that you need a real editor, you know, not one that's as good as you are. Like probably on a couple of the first essays or short stories, we missed, you know, like minor things that, you know, I think I named a snake that I thought wasn't poisonous, but it is, or, you know, and I think I first couple books. And so now I realize, you know, there's more to writing and that you do need the help of more serious editors. And you have to, I'm not a perfectionist. So you have to really pay attention, you know, to what you're doing, and you have to check out things.
Well, and sometimes too, we can be so close to it. I have an editor that I work with down in Florida. I'm in Ohio. She's in Florida. I'd met her years ago when I took a road trip. So it's very strange how you meet people and then they just become part of your writing life. But sometimes you know, because she is like my final one. I work with a couple of beta readers and they'll point out things. And then when it comes to her, because she's never read that particular novel, she'll point out things like, well, you may understand this particular thing, but your readers aren't going to get it. You need to maybe elaborate a little bit more. So she not only identifies things like, okay, we really don't need a comma here. I tend to put commas everywhere you would pause, and not always correctly. Or I love M dashes, and she's like, way too many M dashes. But she will also pick out things that, you know, just because it's clear to you doesn't mean it's clear to the reader. I mean, sometimes as the writer, we understand the motivation or what's going on right. So well, but a reader coming to it cold is going to say, wait, I don't get it. You didn't set this up properly. So yeah, I mean, I don't agree with the writers who say, oh, I don't need an editor. I can do it myself. No, you really can't. You might think you can, but you really can't.
No, you're right there. You're just too close to it.
Exactly. And I understand that you do belong to some writing organizations. Which ones do you belong to?
Last few years, I haven't been that active with any of them. Because I just don't, I'm 81, I live in the country, you know, quite a ways. I'm a suburb of Chicago, but it's a good 85 miles away.
Wow.
So I'm not traveling like I used to. But I did belong to Mystery Writers of America, and then probably not, pay my dues, but I'm not that active any longer. There's a Chicago writers group that I belong to. There's a, I don't even remember right now. I just haven't been going to that many things.
Yeah. No, I
can't. I actually wish I had done more PR 10 years ago. It was easier to get around.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. When you were very active, you know, did you find that there was a benefit to you belonging? I mean, did you from a writing standpoint or the marketing standpoint, did you find that it was useful to you? I'm thinking, you know, for the younger writers, you know, who might be saying, oh, I don't have time to join an organization. But did you find that at those times that you did get something from the organization?
I'm not a big organization person. I know other friends have made friends, have done a lot of PR together with people that are in their same genre. I've never done too much with it, truthfully. I did get ideas, and I know I went, you know, tried to get an agent for a couple books originally when I first started 10 years ago. And it's nice, you know, you get some ideas from other authors.
That's true. Yeah. No, and I understand that. I've never, even when I was in high school and that, I've never been much of a joiner. I'm more of a loner, you know. So
right.
I belong to some, but it's like I think the three I belong to don't even have any chapters anywhere near where I am. So it's kind of like, okay, you know, I read the emails when they come in, I'll go to the website. I have learned some things, I've made some connections, but I'm just not, oddly enough, I belong to the Florida Writers Association, which I joined years ago when my father lived in Florida, because I was going down there all the time. And so I did go to like some of the, obviously this was pre-COVID, I went to the conference and everything, which was really neat, you know, to meet people. But I keep thinking, you know, you pay your dues, you really should be doing more with it or whatever, but I never quite find the time, you know. I guess if it was really critical, I would, but sometimes, well, you know how it is. You run out of time.
Right. And my problem too, my husband, I'm the introvert. He's the extrovert. He's a retired dentist now, but he was very active in all the dental associations and, working, setting up things. So I kind of was his helper and did my writing as my therapy on the side.
No, I can understand that. If you had to give some advice to someone who was just starting out writing, especially writing for publication, what would be some advice that you would give to a new writer?
Follow your dream no matter what age you are. Because I got started in 70. I mean, I wrote my whole life, but I put it out. And unfortunately, no matter how good your book is, you have to get it out there and you have to engage in PR, which isn't fun, but you could have the top book in the world, but if you don't get it to out there,
No one's going to know. I mean,
no.
there's so many being published all the time.
Right.
So you're really in such a crowded field. So, you're right. We have to actually do that and get out and make contacts and whatever works, right?
Right. And probably, if they're young, they know how to work with the internet. I'm lost with it half the time. It's like this morning, what's wrong with this darn computer? So my
Oh,
granddaughter said, "Well, you can do it on the iPad, Grandma. No problem. Just make sure your sound is on." She lives in Tucson.
No, I'm with you there. I turned 70 this year, and it's still, I mean, I am in awe of the writers that can do like the Facebook Live, or they whip their phone out and they do it right away on their phone, and I'm like, I'm not a big fan of the live stuff anyways, but I'm thinking, wait, I'm not entirely sure I would know how to do that. I would be so afraid that I would think I'm recording and I'm not,
Right.
or you forget to shut the recording off and it continues to put it out there in the world, you know? I mean, I'm like you. It's like I want my setup. I want to do it the way I already know how to do it, and don't make me have to learn something new, which I realize is probably not terribly helpful, but we can only learn so many things at one time, right?
Right.
So I always like to end my interviews with this question because everybody has a slightly different answer to it. How do you define writing success for yourself? What makes you feel successful as a writer?
At this age, I'm not looking for money from books. I probably spend more than I'll ever recover. Just having people enjoying my books and telling me they liked it and asking me questions about it is fulfillment at this point.
Yeah, that is. And certainly, I mean, I'm quite impressed with what you've done, that the types of books that you have done, and just your writing in general. I mean, that sometimes it's like you said, it's knowing that the people read it and they enjoyed it. I mean, anybody who goes into this thinking, I'm going to make tons of money, okay, maybe, but the number of people who make tons of money is like this big,
Right.
and then there's the rest of us that, like you said, spend way more than we're going to recoup, unless we strike it really big, which doesn't tend to happen for the majority of us. But just knowing that we brought some enjoyment to somebody, I think that's the biggest thing, right?
Right.
And I am just really so impressed that it's not like you've been doing this for decades and decades. I mean, you did kind of start relatively late, and you didn't adopt the attitude of, oh, I'm too old to do this. I mean, you're still writing, you're still going strong. I find that personally very encouraging, because, you know, the older we get, the more we want, you're like my role model. You know, the older we get, the more we are looking for people who are older than us and still producing and still being creative. It's encouraging and it's reassuring, I guess.
Right.
Well, listen, I have really enjoyed having you on the show. I can't wait to read your next books when they come out. And I wish you continued success with your writing.
Thank you. Same to you. And I've enjoyed your books. We write not so much the murder mystery, but my family sagas are like your books. My Farewell to South Shore and Lori are very similar family sagas. And thank you so much for letting me visit with you and be on your show.
Well, this was just great. Thanks. And thanks to everybody who has joined us here at Living the Writing Life.